Laser Blast.
Hi, I'm Father Dolphin, and you're listening to the Laser Blast Film Society's Laser Focus Podcast.
Are you good, Peter?
Yeah.
Peter really wanted to do a cold open. My name's Justin the Clue.
I'm Matthew Cameron. I backed the cold open.
I'm Nate Wilson.
I'm Peter Kraplowski, and the dolphin just swam away. And the reason why he introduced this episode for us is because we just watched Mike Nichols' Buck Henry written film, Day of the Dolphin.
Well, a lot of suspense there. Yeah. I was getting really excited what movie you were going to talk about.
They might have thought I was going to say Catch 22.
Nope, we decided to watch Day of the Dolphin and Ishtar, but we're going to talk about Day of the Dolphin first.
Hang on, first of all, why was this our double bill?
I picked it because I really wanted to watch Ishtar, Elaine May's famous flop, and she used to be a comedy partner with Mike Nichols, the guy who directed The Graduate, so I said, oh, well, we should watch a failure that Mike Nichols made and a failure that Elaine May made. That makes complete sense.
Day of the Dolphins is the failure that Mike Nichols made.
And there's a big reason why these are failures. Matthew, what did you think of this movie?
I actually think this is the most boring movie I've watched in probably several years.
And it has an amazing poster.
Yeah, the poster is incredible. It has the tagline on the poster, which is a man unwittingly trains a dolphin to assassinate the president. There's an explosion, a scantily clad woman. This seems like it could be an exciting movie, but the premise makes it so little sense. It takes place in what feels like a fictional world where there are secret dolphin researchers that are trying to get the public to not believe that dolphins can talk. And they're being funded by a secret organization that's planning to assassinate the president by using a dolphin to plant a mine that at no point does it seem impossible that a human could just plant the same said mine.
Like, you're making this sound way more exciting than it is.
Well, yeah, because a lot of this is happening behind the scenes, and most of the movie is... like, George C. Scott, who plays the dolphin trainer, doesn't even train the dolphin to do this assassination. That all happens off-screen by another character. He just spends the whole movie going, talk, Fa. The name of the dolphin is Alpha, and Fa for short. And he's just like, talk, Fa, say fish. Over and over again, until finally the dolphin's just like, fish!
Peter looks like such a broken man. He's like hunched over, and he's like, oh, this movie's terrible.
Much like George C. Scott in the movie is a broken man. He's a grumpy asshole.
He doesn't
asshole.
Look like he wants to be there. We were joking earlier that, because for a while, the shots of George C. Scott and the dolphin felt very segregated, as if like he didn't want to be anywhere near that dolphin. But after a while, it does seem like they managed to get him together. But
I don't understand why anyone would want to make this movie. Like, when you hear the concept, you're like, it must be like really goofy or really serious. It's just fucking boring.
Apparently, the novel was more of a satire, and the film is substantially different.
It's like opposite Dr. Strangelove.
The thing is that it is based in like real science. Like during this period of time, people were spending like a significant amount of time just with dolphins, just repeatedly trying to get to speak English. There's a part early in the film where George C. Scott finds his partner has been bitten by the dolphin, and he asks her, was he excited while he bit you? And she was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, that's the third time this week. In the situation of the real science, the dolphin scientists would more or less, anytime the dolphins got the horn, they'd just jerk them off so they could keep going with the language training.
And these scientists had a different option because it seemed like they were not prepared to jerk Fa the dolphin off. So they got him a dolphin mate.
No, they were probably tired of jerking. George C. Scott was tired.
So this was their solution. We'll get him a mate. Doesn't go so well because the dolphin. There's a scene of George C. Scott watching a movie of his wife in the movie jerking up the dolphin, and it's like that scene from Hardcore.
Turn it off.
but no, that like would be a great inclusion in the movie or something interesting happening. There's just like a lot of stuff happening in this movie that we don't know about or we're not even informed of, and then we find out, oh, that happened like while we were watching the boring scientist.
Yeah, this is a movie for people who love dolphins. Yeah. I think that's the only.
I think it speaks to, you know, that we are people of this modern era who just seeing a dolphin swimming about isn't good enough for us. We are like, we need to see this dolphin getting jerked off before we can enjoy this movie. Like, if like this is our period where if people, it's kind of like a movie for people who only roughly have a idea of what a dolphin is.
Yeah, they've like, described it. They've never seen it before.
Yeah, they're like it's like a big shiny fish, but it doesn't have scales. It's got like a smooth. And people are like, really? I would like to see that swimming about in slow motion for a long time. And then you're like, what if George C. Scott was there? And they were like, that would
Describe him to me.
Does he jerk him off?
Yeah, that's invariably the question everyone asks. And this film doesn't deliver. Oh, we do get one explosion, so the poster didn't completely lie. The dolphin is successfully blows up a boat. Spoiler alert, it's not the president's boat, it's the people that hired.
We should clarify that the dolphin, like this president assassination plot only shows up with like 20 minutes left to go in the movie.
Well, this is the thing that also frustrates me. At the end of the movie, after the plot goes awry and the president doesn't blow up, but the secret or sinister organization that kidnapped the dolphins for their nefarious purposes, they get blown up. There's then this fear that people are going to be coming to the island to get these super dolphins so they can do more stuff. But I'm like, they failed their mission miserably. Everyone would kind of give up.
They did not merely fail their mission. They killed like seven people.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because the dolphins now have a taste for human blood.
But, it's also worth noting that we've spent a long time talking about how these dolphins, the whole point is to train them to speak English. The plot to kill the president has nothing to do with dolphins speaking English.
I mean,
the plot is simply the dolphin wears a bomb and it swims along and it attaches the bomb to the bottom of the boat and the bomb explodes. That's all it does.
And I suppose in their logic it was like, well, we need to be able to speak the same language as a dolphin to tell them to do that. But I'm like, you can tell a dog to like do something, and it's not like the dog is sitting there going, like,
dogs can swim. Yeah, dogs can swim. So,
would this film
that's
be more
a hilarious movie?
If
a
it was
dog,
dogs.
Like a
yeah.
wet dog.
Well, we at one point we were imagining like if George C. Scott started a string of movies where like he was teaching different animals how to talk, like cats.
So they could have
he should have been Dr. Doolittle.
No, but he's always training to kill
someone.
They keep bringing George C. Scott back in to train a different animal, and they're like, okay, George, this time you're just going to train a cat to speak English, and he's like, it's not going to kill, like, the president or something. Or they're like, no, it's not even going to try and kill the Prime Minister of Britain. We promise 100% that we'll not try and kill the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And he's like, fine. And then, what does the cat go and do? Tries to kill the Prime Minister of Great Britain.
But the third time,
yeah,
it's personal.
They bring him back in, and it's like, this time, you're going to train this turtle. Just a slow ass turtle. This turtle is not going to try and kill anybody. There is no way the turtle is going to try and kill the Tsar of Russia. And he's like, do they have a Tsar in Russia now? And he's like, yeah, they brought Tsars back. But I mean, that's not important because the turtles are going to try and kill the Tsar or anything. And he's like, fine. And then, what does it do? Tries to kill the Tsar.
And he gets blamed on Tom
Cruise. What would you do if you had a knock on your door? It's like Georgie Scott. He's like, I'm not dead. I'm just waiting for the perfect project.
Well, we have to make those movies now.
Oh, man. I hope they can bring the dolphins back, because they do leave them alive for another sequel.
Henry, in the interview, that the DVD has multiple interviews.
Yeah.
And it's basically everyone being like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
There's a great quote in Wikipedia where it's like, the dailies looked so good. And I'm like, really? They did? Because, I mean, maybe if you hadn't watched a lot of you've seen dolphins before, they would look amazing, because it'd be like, what is this magnificent creature?
Buck Henry says that, you know, there's seconds that he likes in this movie, and he says at the end when they let the dolphins out to go fly. Wow. That's a twist. When they sent them out in the ocean, he said the dolphins went out and they never came back.
Actually, I do like the ending, because I'm wondering if this movie actually started the cliche of when a character has to like get rid of an animal in a movie. They invariably use the "I hate you, go away" routine. That, you know, pod people. And does that happen in E.T.? Does Elliot do that to E.T. at any point?
Like, I don't know.
It happens in loads of stuff, but it's never done as well as when George C. Scott does it.
Yeah. He turns around and is like, Pa don't like Fa.
He does. That's the one moment where, like, George C. Scott went full George C. Scott at the end, where he's like,
he's really trying. Anyway.
So that sounds like, you know, Day of the Dolphin. 4 stars from the group.
One dolphin.
No, like half a dolphin, maybe out of five, like found in a tin of tuna.
Zero dolphins.
This movie fucking sucks. Thankfully, there was another movie to come and pick up the slack afterward.
For about 15 minutes.
And that film was Elaine May's Ishtar. Now, Ishtar, like, everyone jokes that it's, like, a huge flop. The only time that I ever heard that it was a flop was in that Far Side comic, where it's, like, Hell's Video Store, and it's all copies of Ishtar on the shelves.
I have a copy of, Mike Nelson's movie Mega Cheese book, which was like him reviewing new movies, and it's full of Ishtar jokes.
Oh, so it is full of Ishtar jokes?
Ishtar as repeatedly being this kind of bandied about film. It was probably on a bunch of David Letterman top 10 jokes too. Like it was just a classic example of like a Hollywood hubris movie that felt like kind of a vanity project.
It was like one of the last, probably.
No, what are you talking about?
No, I meant like the ones like the kind of like cast off of the 70s.
Oh, of those guys? Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, well, look at, we got...
Dick Tracy came out like years later.
Yeah. That's true. Who kept giving Warren Beatty chances?
Warren Beatty, is it Beatty or Beatty?
Who cares?
Yeah. all he has time to do now is listen to podcasts. He's not doing anything else.
Have you seen his Dick Tracy thing?
Oh, yeah. The 30-minute? It's on the internet. I
know, it's on the internet. Because in order to retain the rights for Dick Tracy, he made a TV special for TCM where it's just him walking. It's him doing an interview with
Leonard Maltin
in character as Dick Tracy, and it's the lamest thing I've ever seen.
You know, I actually think that's really cute that Warren Beatty so wants to hold on to the rights of Dick Tracy so that he's like, I gotta make half an hour internet special about Dick Tracy to count under those rights.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. It's just him walking around the studio and people going like, oh my god, Dick Tracy's here, oh no, oh my god, and he's just acting all cool and stuff like that. It's really embarrassing. It's almost like, it kind of feels like a Make-A-Wish Foundation. Except there's no kid. Like, it's just Warren.
He was sick of the
time. Yeah, Warren Beatty just, like, phones a Make-A-Wish
Foundation.
Maybe
Leonard Maltin was sick.
He's like, I just want to be Dick Tracy again. And he's like, well, I'm old. Just let me be Dick Tracy again.
But anyway, Ishtar. I thought this was, when it started, I mean, we were making fun of it almost immediately, but
because they look really old, Dustin Hoffman and...
It just seems like their characters should be younger. It seems like, it almost feels like an SNL sketch that's been turned into a movie, like, and there is an SNL, like, Will Ferrell used to have that, like, lounge act sketch, so, like, it feels like a late night sketch act that's turned into a film, and they just seem too old for the part. I did kind of enjoy the bad songs Paul Williams wrote and all the banter initially, and it honestly reminded me as like a proto Flight of the Conchords
for those first 15 minutes.
Yeah,
and for anyone who doesn't know what it is, the plot is about two bad lounge singers get a job in Ishtar,
which is a fictional country.
Desert country. They go, they get, you know, involved.
It turns into, like, another movie.
Yeah, like an action movie where they're spies and stuff, and they get trapped in the desert, and it's really boring.
Well, basically, it's like, if you said, what if we had spies like us, but we had two people who looked older and also weren't comedians? That could make it funnier.
I think that Ishtar is funnier than Spies Like Us.
Yeah. They're both bad.
You know what? I would maybe say it's funnier only because there are a few moments of incredulity that really push it over the top. Like, just they're when they're singing their songs, they really do. Nate, you pointed out it's really consistent with how bad the songs are.
Yeah,
they're never kind of good
one of those things where, like, whenever there's a comedy about someone who's bad at whatever they do, usually there's a moment where they do it well in, like, a funny way, so it's still, like, they're doing it bad, but it's entertaining to watch as an audience.
It's like, you know, when Christopher Guest does, like, Spinal Tap or Mighty Wind, like, those songs are actually good, even though the performers are, like, kind of naive and crazy and weird. But they're just weird.
It's just like, wow, no, these songs are all terrible.
No, and they're all legitimately, like, cringeworthy. And then playing them and singing them, you're never at one point...
Like, Tim and Eric's songs even are catchier, when they're trying to do bad music.
It sets up the characters and it gives them these songs and stuff, but the problem is that when you make these films which are about things are happening around two idiot characters or an idiot character that they'd have no control over and they sort of bumble through it, like, the characters still have to be involved in some way. This film basically completely forgets about Warren Beatty and
they disappear for like 20 minutes,
like,
at one
point they're in it but they have almost no part in it whatsoever. In fact, possibly because of Elaine May's previous role to Charles Grodin. As soon as Charles Grodin shows up, he becomes more compelling than anyone else in the movie.
His performance is bizarre. He's super soft-spoken through the whole movie. His direction notes have been like, understate all your lines. Like he's just sort of breathing them into a microphone, literally in one scene.
Yeah.
It's actually difficult to understand.
As soon as we noticed it, too, it got funnier.
Yeah.
Because
he's
such, like, he looks like it was outtakes of him going over his lines.
You know what? I would even give the movie, like, more than 50 minutes. It had me up for, like, 30 minutes up until the end of an action scene. And then I just completely go into the desert for, like, 40 minutes. And they're just
trapped. The movie's over.
Yeah, and then the movie's over.
Yeah, I mean, the characters... it's not so much that they're uninvolved in the plot. It's just that everyone's making decisions for them. And they're... they're just having conversations that even feel, from an acting standpoint, that both actors are kind of not even that engaged in their conversations.
Yeah, and even like the wacky hijinks they get up to have nothing to do with that wider plot. There's an entire section, entire super racist section with arms dealers and tribesmen that just... They're involved in that, but it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
And it's long. And it's really long.
Yeah.
Which we said, like, I wish I could be there at the premiere listening to that sweet silence.
But I was talking about that there's actually, like, mega fans of this film. Do you think that comes just from the film being, like, hated so much?
Absolutely. I think some of it comes from that. I can see people getting super endeared by the two characters, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it is reminiscent of... What
Bob Hope?
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be like a Bob Hope kind of Bing Crosby like Road 2 movie. Like that's the whole point. But I can also see it being like a proto Flight of the Conchords, and anyone who appreciates that, like that's why I was kind of appreciating or Tim and Eric, like you're appreciating that kind of celebration of mediocrity. And that stuff was good, but the movie even forgets about it. Like they don't do any kind of lounge
music stuff.
A
solid hour in the middle.
They jam it in all at the end. Yeah. I don't know. Like the only reason I can assume that anyone would get obsessed with this movie is classic VHS culture. They just went to the video store a lot when they were like really wee. They were like 6 or 7, and they just rented Ishtar a lot for some reason. Because Ishtar. The video case has this really, well, and we probably, if you're like 6 in the 80s, has this really cool looking camel with like glasses on. And
really?
A phone.
Oh. Just like Joe Campbell.
Yeah, like it looks like, and if
I'm
you were
surprised that the blind camel, they didn't put sunglasses on the blind camel.
Yeah, but if you saw it as a kid, you'd be like, well, a camel with sunglasses, this movie's gotta be good. And then you'd watch it. You'd be like, okay, these old men are singing weird songs, but it's kind of maybe like Indiana Jones, they're in the desert and stuff, right?
No, it's not even that. You just go back to the video stream, you see that case again, you're like, Ishtar, that wasn't very good, but that case. Like,
yeah, you just watch
that again.
You just watch over
and
over
again. Wait, Nate, this is coming from someone who admitted that he's like, I rented Airplane 2, like,
no,
four
yeah.
dozen times.
Oh, yeah, I said in the middle. We always went to the store to find Airplane 1, but someone had Airplane 1 for like a year. So every single time we were like, Airplane 2.
You know what the best part of Ishtar, though, is at one point I was Airplane laughing with tears in my eyes because we were talking about Zaz jokes.
That's true. We did spend a long time talking about how good Top Secret was.
But no, it really does feel like one of those mediocre comedies like Spies Like Us. It doesn't feel like an extravagant, like we were saying, like it'd be a great double bill with 1941. But it doesn't feel like 1941, which is crazy or something. It doesn't feel like even that excessive. It just feels really mediocre.
Is so
mediocre.
Grand and opulent. This for as expensive as the movie apparently was, looks pretty cheap throughout the film.
Yeah,
for supposedly. Yeah, I don't remember where I read it.
The actions are super uneventful.
Yeah, the reason it costs a lot of money is because of like customs and stuff like that. Like it's not up on
screen. Location was hard. I did enjoy the final action beat. It's too short where they're just like shooting and blowing up, almost blow up the helicopter. I kind of wish they did.
Yeah, I mean,
and like had like murdered like CIA agents. That might have been kind of darkly hilarious.
That's like a weird thing of movies. Like it feels like it's very boring, but it's a movie that at the beginning you're watching a couple of shitty lounge singers, and then by like the end they are firing grenade launchers at helicopters, and you explain that and it sounds amazing. Like you're like, well, how did they get there? And you're like, eh. just a bunch of stuff happens, yeah, and it's not really nothing.
They literally just wander into the desert.
Yeah, well, like mumbling to themselves.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I think the perfect 1941 triple bill would be Francis Ford Coppola's One from the Heart.
Ah, classic.
Another film that famously cost like $50 million.
That movie's amazing. It's really interesting.
And Troy Hark's Shanghai Blues.
Yes.
Which is genuinely very good.
We were talking about that.
So would you sandwich 1941 in the middle there?
No, it has to come last.
No, don't end the evening with all those screams.
You have to. Well, you can't watch another movie after 1941. Never, you
know, yeah, I did.
Did
recently.
We talk about Laser? Okay, so Laser Blast Film Society, I think 3 years ago, did watch 1941. We didn't do a podcast from it because everyone was so disgusted by it at the end that everyone just left silently. But Peter recently saw 1941 with a packed house. And what did they think, Pete?
I think a lot of people were falling asleep. I think if it wasn't a famous internet blogger's birthday party, I think there would have been some booze.
What, there was no booze at this party that you were at?
No, nobody ever booed. Everyone was in, no, because, you know, come on. You know, we're all here to celebrate Harry Knowles and watch some cool movies.
No,
so.
I just mean, that's crazy. Like how can people hate that movie so much? Why do people hate that movie
come
so
on.
Much?
But it's
bad.
The 1941 podcast I wanted all along.
It's all, the
it's
jokes
so,
are
so bad.
No, it's an American Hong Kong movie.
All right, sorry, Matthew?
I just like the idea that people were so polite at somebody's birthday party that you could do anything to them and people wouldn't boo. It's like, yeah, this is my birthday party. At my birthday party, I stick pipe cleaners up your pee hole. And you're gonna like it. And everybody's like...
For 24 hours.
Hey, leave the party.
Yeah, you don't get to boo. If Harry Knowles wants to stick pipe cleaners up my pee hole, that's okay.
You know, you got the name of the episode.
I don't know if anyone noticed this when they last watched Class. I was going to call it Class of 1941, but when they watched Class 1941, but True Williams is like they're trying
so
to
rapey.
True Williams is so rapey in that
movie. They're trying to go for like a Pepe Le Pew thing, but you're like, no, Pepe Le Pew in real life is terrified. Is it Nancy Allen? I can't remember.
It's
who
Nancy
is.
Allen.
She's like being dragged under a car.
Yeah,
going
like,
help!
Help!
Oh, what a great
movie. The thing is, it was everyone her fault for
loud.
Having paint, a strip of paint on her back.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
otherwise,
about that.
Otherwise, he wouldn't have attacked
her. You know
him.
What? And she didn't. If she had walked through the turpentine factory, that
yeah,
would have solved
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, yeah, I mean.
All right. Well, so we watched those two films. Do we know what we're watching next week?
No, I don't know yet.
So it's a surprise to both us and the viewers.
I'm gonna go home and watch 1941.
I have it on Laserdisc. I'm gonna pop it. I was so
is
excited.
Is that the original version?
Yeah, it is. I was so excited to find the Laserdisc in the garbage, and I was like, "How much is this?" The guy's like, $3."
You know,
like, yes.
You know what we can talk about? We can talk about the next Laser Blast video nights that's coming up.
Oh,
if anyone listens to
how about we? Wait, no, you weren't at the last one that we did, right? I don't even remember what it was.
Riot!
Yeah. The Christmas fantastic. Yeah, we're doing Hawk Jones next, which we did as a Laser Blast. Yep. Secret Laser Blast before, too.
We double-billed it with Bugsy Malone, which is also playing at the Royal the weekend following the Hawk Jones screening. And
what's the date for the Hawk Jones screening?
The 21st of January. It's okay. Wednesday, 9:30 p.m. We're hoping to get a video message from the director.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Kayla Janice of Kid Power fame is looking into that for us.
Oh, that'd be awesome. What did you think of Hawk Jones when you saw it, Matthew?
I really enjoyed it, you know? But for some reason now I just want to talk about Bugsy Malone, which is so weird.
Okay, well, Bugsy Malone.
The way of Hawk Jones is it's basically Lethal Weapon with a cast of kids, like Bugsy Malone.
Mm-hmm. Wait, were you a fan of Bugsy Malone when we watched it?
Yeah, no, I mean, Bugsy Malone is like a British perennial, right? Yeah. Every Christmas they show it. In fact, I just watched it this Christmas again. Actually, that's a lie. What happens is I turned the television on, and I went, oh, it's Bugsy Malone. This movie's really weird, but I love the ending. And then I left the room for a while, and I came back, and my mum had paused the television for like half an hour just before the ending for me. Thanks, mum.
I don't think she listens to this podcast.
No, she won't, and I've sworn a lot, so she can't.
Wait, so when you go home, are you like, hello, mother? I can't do your accent.
Yeah, that's why I like. We actually are a family of Victorian chimney sweeps. I go home and I change my Scottish accent, and I'm like,
I thought he was doing a dolphin impression.
Yeah, yeah. No, It's funnily enough, my mother is in fact a dolphin.
Yeah. That's why that movie spoke to you. All right, so I guess we should say goodbye. And do we have a dolphin that can say goodbye to everyone?
Wait, is the dolphin going to come back?
Yeah, I think so. Here it comes.
No, turn it off.
Here it comes.
Hi, everyone. I'm Fa, and I'm here to say good night.
That's not a joke. That's funny unless you've seen the movie.
And you can play audio from the movie and intersect it.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
it will blow your mind.